Finally, I believe a reform system should protect those who depend on Social Security the most. So I propose a Social Security system in the future where benefits for low-income workers will grow faster than benefits for people who are better off. By providing more generous benefits for low-income retirees, we'll make this commitment. If you work hard and pay into Social Security your entire life, you will not retire into poverty. This reform would solve most of the funding challenges facing Social Security. A variety of options are available to solve the rest of the problem, and I will work with Congress on any good faith proposal that does not raise the payroll tax rate or harm our economy. I know we can find a solution to the financial problems of Social Security.
Shut the hell up, Boy George. This nonsense about, you know, we can find a solution to this Social Security problem, that's fair. You're the problem. You and your capitalist masters. The system's the problem. The mere fact that people would have to even go on a Social Security program to survive is an indictment on this industrialized, barbaric, inhumane, all-American Christian society. So don't talk about promises to younger workers and stuff. The only program and future you have for younger workers is working as the imperialist killing machine and being killed in the process in places like Iraq. Watching their jobs sail overseas, watching our future go up in smoke. Well, you know what time it is. It's time for you to go up in smoke. Slave time, check. You're listening to 104.1, 106.7 Illinois, 101.1 Santa Cruz, LUVER.com, the world, radioforall.net, the universe, and check into your Slave Revolt blog, this Google web in Slave Revolt Radio, find out what time it is. Tonight, we're going to shoot our way into a new segment that deals with another Negro. This one, Kenneth Blackwell from Ohio. Then we're going to deal with what the hell is going on in the NBA and fan violence and the Sudan. So we got all that and a hell of a lot more on 104.1 Slave Revolt.
See, one thing is, you a Democrat or is you a Republican?
Well, I was a Democrat. But I believe I have done switched over to the Republicans now.
The thing I'm going to ask you, what is the difference between a Democrat and a Republican?
Well, one of them is a mule and the other one is an elephant. That's the way I get it.
I don't know if I'm going to be a Democrat or a Republican, you know.
Well, what was your ancestor?
My aunt didn't have no sister.
Not your aunt's sisters, your ancestors. I mean, how did your old man vote?
Oh, my papa, you mean?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, papa used to always vote for the Democrat.
Well, then if I was in your place, I would vote for the Republican.
How come?
Because I ain't never knowed your old man to do nothing right in his life.
Wait a minute now, wait a minute. Don't say no more about him now.
Well, on the other hand, though, I believe you ought to vote for the Democrats because you look more like a mule than anything I know.
Well, I'm willing to be whichever is the best one. I don't care. I'm willing to be either one. Tell me this. I'm going to ask you another question here.
What's that?
How you know who to vote for? That's the thing. That's the question right there now.
Look up the record. Look at President Cooley. What did he do during his admiration?
He's been fishing most of the time, ain't he?
Listen, Coolidge is a Republican. And for the last 4 years or so, he has done had Hoover locked up waiting to put him in office.
What do you mean he done had Hoover locked up?
Well, I was reading in the paper right after Hoover was nominated that Coolidge was getting ready to take Hoover out to Capitol.
He better get out and get some fresh air if he gonna be president, I tell you that.
You know, I had a dream last night about the re-election.
What did you dream? Explain it to me.
Well, I dreamed that I saw the White House.
Mm-hmm.
Thousands of people were standing out in the front. And I looked and I saw a man coming right in the White House. It was Al Smith. It was after the election, and there was Al Smith walking right in the White House.
Mm-mm. Al Smith walking right in the White House, huh?
Yeah. Herbert Hoover sent for him. The thing we have got to do, Amos, is to make up our minds if we are going to be Republican or be a Democrat.
I believe I'll be a good old Democrat.
But I'm going to be Republican. You go ahead, be a Democrat. You is crazy.
You is all right, ain't you?
Certainly I was all right.
Then I was glad I was crazy.
All right, as you can hear, we're about to start a new segment. The Amos and Andy Show, dedicated to minstrel Negroes out working on behalf of the Democrat and Republican Party. And tonight, what we're going to deal with is how the minstrelization process by Negroes who choose to operate according to the rules of Sam has struck another low. The properly educated Amos and Andy Negro, Kenneth Republican Blackwell, came hours late to a scheduled committee field hearing, probably because he was in the House. And he was questioned first by Melinda McDonald, who's a Democrat congresswoman, and was asked certain questions about what the hell went on in Ohio during the 2004 presidential election. Old Kenneth Amos Blackwell was the leader of the whole process and had the has the position of the Secretary of the State and was the one who was in charge as the chief election officer of quote-unquote making sure things were supposed to go A-OK in Ohio. Well, as we know quite explicitly, things did go A-OK. So let's listen to how his response to Melinda McDonald's question concerning this particular issue concerning the elections went down. Check this out.
You knew ahead of time that these members were going to come to the floor and speak their displeasure about this election. Why didn't you then write a letter to try to clarify some of this, as opposed to calling them nasty and disingenuous?
Well, let me just say,
you are a man of honor,
and integrity, and professionalism, and the list goes on.
That is correct.
Let me,
and I'm happy that you're touting that and humble.
Very much so.
So as you can hear from old arrogant Kenneth Amos Blackwell, he didn't even just be professional, quote unquote, about the whole situation and write a letter outlining and responding back to the people Instead, all he does is respond back viciously, calling names and insults, like Amos and Andy. I mean, that's all this
Literally.
Negro is. Yeah. With, you know, basically some degrees behind his name. But that's it. But he's a minstrel Negro. And as long as he plays the right proper game with the right proper diction, then it's all good in America.
Tracy, but tell me, is he a Republican?
Yeah, he is.
He's actually Republican.
Yeah.
This is what...
Actually, he's thinking about running for governor in Ohio.
Well, you know, and there's a reason. You know, there has been a conscious attempt on the part of the corporations to nurture and develop a black right wing for years now. When we saw Clarence Thomas, Tracy and I, this is years ago, when they first put him forward, that was under Bush Sr. Wasn't that under Bush Sr., Trace?
Yeah, it was.
You know, we then said, we went back to this whole thing, the Lincoln Club and all
Lincoln Review.
That's right. I'm sorry, the Lincoln Review and all of the organizations and his political genealogy. You understand what I'm saying? To show that they had a project of nurturing and developing black right-wing politics all along. By the way, I mean, let's face it, even in the 30s, you're going to have black right-wing politics. It's just so hard to deal with, to come out open, when they won't let you cross the railroad tracks. So in that situation, the conservatism of some of the so-called Negro leaders was, oh, I don't know if I want to say it was kind of suppressed by the fact that if they open up their mind, they beat their ass in public. They open up their mouth, they smack them down like a, you know, like a $3 hoe. So they didn't have a lot of respect for black people generally, which didn't give a lot of maneuvering room to black right-wingers early on, like Booker T. Washington, I might say, you know? But now, listen to this fool. Not only is he insulting people, as Tracy said, but he's pathologically ill. He's obviously some kind of egomaniac. Did I hear right, Trace?
Oh, yeah, you heard right. The type of Negroes like him have also been hindered by the fact that there was a much stronger, vibrant social movement in the black community, which made the lines even clearer. It was not as easily compromised on the economic type of issues that you see many of these Negro type of ministers and churches, you know, playing the games with now. Negroes would have just lynched them, you know, years back, because black people as a whole were pushing much further and stronger at the time. So with the regression of a lot of the black political social movement, these sick Negroes have seized the time, so to speak, and have just come running out of the house to basically scream on the plantation that everything's all right, and we all should try to go up into the burning house with Massa. The Lincoln Review, which Armstrong Williams was deeply a part of and helped Clarence Thomas become part of.
Is that right?
The Lincoln Review, actually, these Negroes were, it was all a little Negro conservative group. They actually were getting paid by the South African apartheid government to go out and speak to black people and others to try to put a good face on the apartheid system. That's how scandalous these types of Negroes are and where their roots are.
Now, here you go. What kind of commercial could the likes of an Armstrong, who was obviously one of the most scandalous Negroes you've ever seen, or Clarence Thomas have done to bolster and prettify South African apartheid? Let me see here. We could do an Amos Nandy thing on they ass. Well, Andy, what you say about their, about how they doing our brothers down there in South Africa? Hey, well...
Well, it's a lot better than the rest of the African continent. So, you know, we can't be too hard on what they're doing over there. Because at least they got a place to lay their hair without a giraffe or an elephant stomping on it.
At least they got some work there. I see they be going to work out down in the mines.
And you knows how we don't like working.
Yeah, boy. You know, so you got to wonder, what do you... I don't support assassination as a political method. I want to make that clear to y'all. Shooting people's heads off does not solve the social problems. As the Wobblies used to say, you cannot explode a social relationship. But my word, what do you do with some Negro running around lobbying for South African apartheid and then wind up on the Supreme Court? We in trouble, brothers and sisters. We got to unify.
These are agents. Now, next, McDonald asked Kenneth Amos Blackwell, the chief election officer in Ohio, about why he didn't buy more machines, since it was clear that in the inner city, code word for black areas, the voting machines were in short supply and that you were going to have loads of people standing out in line for hours, many of whom would get discouraged and others who would not even get a chance to vote. Let's listen to how Amos responds. Check it out.
In your brilliance, will you tell me who would have paid for it?
I'm sorry?
In your brilliance, would you tell me who would have paid for it?
It's a possibility you would not have had that, even though you got the third highest amount of money from HAVA.
Can you tell me who would have paid for it?
But you know what, Mr. Secretary of State? You are the chief election officer.
That ain't going straight
and
I am.
You,
tell you something.
Should have had...
I am not the legislature. I am the Secretary of State.
Damn.
Now, as you can hear... See, at first Amos comes off saying, you know, could you tell me who's going to pay for it? You know, in other words, people having their so-called democratic right in this society was something that he looked at as some just a monetary
bill.
Issue.
Yeah.
And then coming to the realization that it was a bill that at least him and his colleagues or whoever in the state weren't going to pay for it. They weren't going to go out of their way. And then gets seething with arrogance and viciousness towards McDonald over this particular issue. I mean, this is just a self-hating type of Negro. There was no need for him to respond back to her like that. But he just feels that she has no right to be questioning him on this particular issue.
Exactly.
He has also stated that he feels that Ohio was a model to the nation and had proceeded in the best way concerning the election process, and that people should look to Ohio on how Ohio ran its elections. Now, you can see how he's just seething with anger and arrogance and denial. This is just a script by just a coon. And that's what we got dealing with.
Tracy, how do you, you know, I like to believe, I tell you what I like to believe, folks. I like to believe that regardless of your color, when we have a political difference, that I don't need to call you a name. I don't need to degrade you. I would like to believe that I can look at the political difference that we have, examine it from all sides, and that we can debate the point in an intelligent fashion based on logic. You understand that? That's what I'd like to believe. But you know what happens? When you look at a piece of human feces like this creature here, I'm sorry, folks. We ain't out here just disrespecting people because we ain't got nothing better to do with ourselves. You hear them with your own ears. Disrespect that system. And that goes with the politics, y'all. You understand that? These bourgeois politics, unfortunately, a lot of the Democrats ain't much better. actually are based on contempt and disrespect for the masses.
And he's seething with anger because he's being challenged on something that, you know, he wasn't drafted to do this. This Negro took that position to get ahead, quote unquote, in his whole worldview. Then he gets called on it and he doesn't want to be answerable to anyone. Now, next, the next woman steps in, another black woman, Stephanie Tubbs Jones. And when she hits the mic, she asks Kenneth Amos Blackwell some questions. Blackwell explains out about why he wouldn't even shake her hand. Let's check out this Amos, angry Amos. Dig it.
I chose not to shake your hand.
Now, that's the question is, you chose not to shake my hand in the anteroom because it was so good to see me. Was that correct?
I chose not to shake your hand so I see how you comport yourself in this setting.
Well, you know what? Watch me, sir.
So, once again, angry Amos says that he's not going to shake her hand until he sees how she comports herself. Now, what's sinister about this whole process is that these two are within the Imperial Party. She's a Democrat, he's a Republican. So in other words, they're not enemies. So there's no need for Blackwell to be comporting himself in this way, except for the fact that he's just a self-hating Negro. And Negroes like him, Shelby Steele, Armstrong Williams, Mack Waters, Clarence Thomas, they would never disrespect a white woman in that type of situation.
Never.
But when it comes to some black woman,
uh-huh.
You know, and you see this in their little books, you know, Mack Waters and Shelby Steele. This is the type of vitriolic attack that they do on black people overall.
It's just Cosby.
Yeah, it's just a non-ending type of minstrel show.
You know, Tracy, damn, I'm glad you mentioned that, because if you stop and think about this a minute. Remember, as I said before, we would like to believe that we could discuss these issues, you know, in a way like we're discussing issues with brothers and sisters, and try to unearth the cause behind all of this misery and try to map a road forward for us all, for our mutual benefit. But dig this, y'all. When that punk bitch says, where's he gonna get the money from so that black people can vote? Ask me where I get the money from. If I'm in his position, I get the money so black people can... He's the Secretary of State. That was obfuscation. He didn't want to answer the question, because the truth of the matter is, he did not want to get the money, because he did not want the black people, 90% of whom are known to be Democrats, to vote at all. That's the ugly truth. I was watching Democracy Now months ago while the election was in progress. It was right after the election. They were talking about the problems in Ohio, because that's what the Republicans did. They used Florida as their focus for the 2000 elections. In 2004, they used Ohio as the state where they tried to pull, you know, their little shenanigans. And they showed the line of the black people that were waiting to vote, Tracy. It broke your heart. Because what do we always hear about our black people? About us. Oh, lazy bastards don't want to vote no way. Oh, yeah, don't worry about it. They can't read the ballot no way. They ain't gonna, don't worry about it. They ain't gonna do nothing. Well, apathetic, etc., etc. This time, it really wasn't like that. Now, I would say I feel bad that all of our enthusiasm and effort and all the stuff that the young hip-hoppers were trying to do and all the work that people put in were behind an unworthy candidate, and that is John Kerry. Listen to Slave Revolt. Go back and check out our prior programs. We never wavered. No vote to Kerry. Build a workers' party. build a workers' power. That's where we need to be going with this thing. But, you know, man, it really made me feel bad to see those black folks lined up like that. See, besides just a very undemocratic thing, it was inhumane because it was freezing out there, y'all. It was freezing, sometimes snowing, sometimes raining, depending on which part of Ohio people were standing in lines. We talking 1,000 people in line to vote. Tracy's right. A lot of them never got to vote. That's a self-hating thing.
And this is why black people need to crystallize what the hell's going on even more. When I say crystallize, it's not so much of understanding per se, because there's a certain understanding, but get out of the trap that you have no options. You do have options. We have options. It's just outside of the sphere that they're trying to bombard us with. You know it's a sham, the game that they're playing. So play it no longer. Now, next, Stephanie Jones asked Amos Blackwell why he spent $2.5 million in a statewide TV campaign telling people they had to vote in their precinct only. Tens of thousands of black people were left standing in these long lines. And remember, Blackwell stating before about the understock voting machine, you know, could you tell me in your brilliance where I'm going to get the money from? Where are we going to get the money from? Now, he said in his campaign, TV campaigns, he said you have to vote in your precinct only. This is what his commercial said. Even though people could vote at the local board of elections, they had that option. They didn't have to just vote at their precinct. So let's see how he responds.
That's right.
When Stephanie Jones challenges him on this. Dig this.
And in this ad, you said, vote your precinct, but you never told them that if they couldn't vote their precinct, they could go to the Board of Elections and vote. Did you, sir?
I sure did.
Excuse me?
Can you hear? I said, I sure didn't.
And you did not. Why?
Because you can only get so much information in a 30-second ad, which is the most
important. But that was potent information because you just gave that to all of us for the world to see, sir, that either you go vote at a designated voting location, you vote in your precinct, or you go to the Board of Elections.
Absolutely.
So here this Sambo, Amos, Kenneth Amos Blackwell, his excuse for not telling people in the TV ad, which was his job to put these things out, that they also have the option of voting at their local boards of election, is because you only have so much time in a 30-second ad. Yet at the same time, he had time enough to put in the words that, for the people to only vote at their precinct. So he intentionally misled them.
Absolutely.
This wasn't a thing about not having time.
Absolutely.
This is about deception. This is about corruption. This Negro, this Amos Negro is corrupt at the core.
And extremely anti-black, by the way. Because I'm not kidding y'all. I've seen these pictures. To do that to people, that was pretty vile. It's really vile.
And this exposes and is an indictment on the whole system. It's not just an indictment on this pathetic Amos Negro. It's not just an indictment on the Republican Party. This is an indictment on the Democrats and the whole sham of the system that blossoms these cruds out. They have to be done away with. Now, last, Amos, with his little behind getting spanked a little bit by these two black women, cries foul and says that he's not going to take it anymore. He's not going to take it anymore.
I refuse
sit here and be harangued by you.
You know what, Mr. Blackwell, I'm not trying to harangue you, sir, but if you choose not to have me ask you questions, haul butt. Go on. See you later.
The time's expired.
This dude saying the time's expired. It wasn't really expired. He was trying to save Blackwell.
Oh, Uncle Tom, yeah.
Yeah, she just told him to haul butt and get on. That's how vicious the whole thing had become because of how Blackwell was acting. He's a coward. See, it's easy to stand around all of these rich white Republican supporters and bash people, deceive them through television ads, put out these cruddy machines, have them understocked, and then make these vicious statements about them and their confidence afterwards because you're hiding behind people. Two black women challenge them on some of these things face to face, and Amos can't take it. Oh, Kenneth Amos Blackwell crumbles within minutes. Now, I've been trying to get the whole thing because, you know, I've only been able to get, you know, certain little excerpts and stuff because like C-SPAN and all of those other guys, they didn't even come. It was just through some little public access TV in Ohio that, you know, did the little broadcast. So otherwise, I would have had much more to expose them. But I think you have an idea on the true nature of Kenneth Amos Blackwell.
We in trouble.
And in the end, he's in trouble. Hold on a sec.
Everywhere. I was right. Everything I knew was wrong.
You know what time it is now. Beyond the Shadow. And tonight, the way we're going to run this Beyond the Shadow situation is deal with an article that's in the LA Times. It has to do with the Sudan. And we're going to explore some of the discussion that the LA Times writer, Ken Silverstein, is openly talking about concerning the Sudan and Sam's relationship to kind of expose what I've been saying about the Sudan and how, just like any other neo-capitalist government, they'll use their religion to hypnotize the masses internally and externally to get behind them. Meanwhile, they're playing the same type of collaborative imperial game all these other despotic regimes are, including genocide. Now, the article is called Official Pariah, Sudan, Valuable to America's War on Terrorism. I should also say, just like Uncle Ben, meaning Bin Laden. Some of it goes, the Bush administration has forged a close intelligence partnership with the Islamic regime that once welcomed Osama bin Laden here. Even though Sudan continues to come under harsh U.S. and international criticism for human rights violations, the Sudanese government, an unlikely ally, says Silverstein, in the U.S. fight against terror, remains on the most recent U.S. list of state-sponsored terrorisms. At the same time, however, it has been providing access to terrorism suspects and sharing intelligence data with the United States. Last week, the CIA sent an executive jet here to ferry the chief of Sudan's intelligence agency to Washington for secret meetings sealing Khartoum's sensitive and previously veiled partnership with the administration, U.S. government officials confirmed. A decade ago, bin Laden and his fledgling al-Qaeda network were based in Khartoum after they left for Afghanistan. The regime of Sudanese strongman Lieutenant General Omar Hassan Ahmed Bashir retained ties with other groups the U.S. accuses of terrorism. Now, let me stop right there. First of all, during this time that Osama was supposed to be on the outs with the U.S. empire, we know that Osama in the mid and late 90s was actually tied within the CIA along with the Al-Qaeda network. And if Osama is in Sudan kicking it and he has links and ties that we have exposed through other shows with the CIA and was still within the network of operating with the OSI, you know, the Pakistani intelligence operation and so on and so forth, that is clear, or should be, that the Khartoum government was still forging relationships underneath the cover. Now, as Silverstein had said earlier in his particular article, he said that Washington, Sudan's intelligence agency met with some CIA guys for a secret meeting sealing Khartoum's secretive and previously veiled partnership with the administration. This is to help protect the Khartoum government that is playing the card like, you know, hey, we don't take, you know, these are infidels, you know, and all of that type of stuff. When in actuality, they're working with the operatives with the CIA. This is all a sham. These guys are not at odds with each other. In the same way that the Saudi government at times pretends to its people that it's willing to work with forces that are hostile to the American government, you know, and that, in other words, like they're sensitive. But in the meantime, we know that they're interconnected with American imperialism. So they're doing, so the Saudi government does this to appease its population because of the contradictions that exist within the society, and the Sudanese government's doing the same thing. So let me continue. It goes, as recently as September, then Secretary of State Colin Cancer Powell accused Sudan of committing genocide and putting down an armed rebellion in the western province of Darfur. And the administration warned that the African country's conduct posed, quote, an extraordinary threat to the national security, unquote, of the U.S. But behind the scenes, however, Sudan was emerging as a surprisingly valuable ally of the CIA. The warming relationships has produced significant results, according to interviews with American and Sudanese intelligence and government officials. They disclose, for example, that Sudan Mubarak, its version of the CIA, has detained Al-Qaeda suspects for interrogation by U.S. agents. In other words, they're just playing a game back and forth. The Sudanese intelligence agency has seized and turned over to the FBI evidence recovered in raids on suspected terrorist homes, including fake passports. Sudan has expelled extremists. Now, if Sudan government expelled extremists, there wouldn't be any government. Running around committing genocide. I mean, come on. And along with that, Sudan has expelled extremists, putting them into the hands of Arab intelligence agencies working closely with the CIA. And the regime is credited with foiling attacks against American targets by, among other things, detaining foreign militants moving through Sudan on their way to join forces with Iraqi insurgents. Now,
damn. And they be talking that is Islam. Allah, you up by.
That's right. All of this Islamic.
And turning around and giving up the names and the 411 to Sam. That's kind of rough.
Because they're trying to maintain the stability of the imperial capital infrastructure. They don't want to see anything evolve into an organic anti-imperial movement globally any more than Sudan.
Them.
That's right. Now, also, they state that, quote, Sudan has, quote, given us specific information that is important, functional, and current. This was by a senior State Department official. He also states that, quote, their competence level as a service is very high. You can't survive in that part of the world without a good intelligence service, and they are in a position to provide significant help, unquote. Now, it's true. You have to have good covert operative intelligence services when you're doing the type of dirt that the Khartoum government, the NIF, National Islamic Front, is doing. In the same way that the South African apartheid government had an extremely good intelligence operation going and often worked collaboratively with the U.S. Empire and with Mossad out of Israel. So, of course, if you are a despotic regime, you better have a good intelligence operation going on. Now,
just a side
point. Yeah, go ahead.
Trey, since you mentioned that, I think it's important to realize, I don't know, you know, what was on Tracy's mind right then, but you should know, we just resolved the case here in the United States where we caught up with a San Francisco police officer who was working for the Israeli Mossad. Now, you guys think, oh, you go with your conspiracy. Yeah, well, guess what? This one was in the San Francisco Chronicle. You understand? This is all over the place. Because dude would arrest anti-apartheid protesters, take their names, and give them to the Israeli consulate, who in turn slipped it to the Mossad. The Mossad then turned around and gave them to South Africa. Some of those people who were indeed arrested in the United States were South Africans. Some of them made the error of going back home a little bit too soon. Wind up in a torture chamber in Pretoria. Oh yes, that's the way it works. That's what Tracy's talking about. This is all real.
Now, moving on, continuing in the article, quote, American intelligence considers us to be a friend, unquote. This was said by Major General Yahya Hassan Babacar. He's a senior official to Sudan's government. Now, during an interview at the presidential palace, Babacar said Sudan had achieved, quote, a complete normalization of our relations with the CIA, unquote. Now, keep in mind, this is current. This is while these dogs are committing genocide against the western portion of the population, the black portion of the population in Darfur. Moving on. Intelligence Chief Major General Salah Abdullah Ghosh said this, quote, "We have a strong partnership with the CIA. The information we have provided has been very useful to the United States." Unquote. Now, they also go on to talk about in the article how Bashir's government faces strong internal opposition, including critics within the regime itself, to cooperating with the U.S., responding to an uproar over rumors of collaboration with the administration in late 2001, Bashir, he's the president of Sudan, told the Khartoum news conference, quote, "I swear in God's name that we have not handed and will not hand in any terrorism suspects to the United States." Unquote. Ali Akbar! Ali Akbar! Ali Akbar! Get the hell out of here,
that old bullshit.
This shows you, once again, how they exploit.
Treacherous.
And how they exploit their little hocus pocus religion to. I mean, because there's been little whining, little. Well, I won't get into the one I had to shoot, but this, you know, little. Islamic type of Arab nationalist types here in the States who whine about the presentation on the Sudan issue. You know, now they've never been to the Sudan, but basically, even though they're supposed to be somewhat progressive, like on issues of Palestine, any criticism of the Sudan, they see,
oh!
Right, they go crazy. They don't want to go into the history, how the Arabs got there, and on all the stuff I talked about in previous Sudan commentaries, or should I say segments.
Slavery Vote. By the way, you can get those on the blog.
Yeah, on the Slavery Vote blog. So here you have a situation, though, that it was clear, though, what this government was all about because of the capitalist game that they're in. And that them being a minority of the population in the Sudan, they have to, since they are coming from an imperial capital mode, have to be extremely undemocratic and at times genocidal to pacify the population. So that's their mode of operation and stuff. Now, it's hard to generally motivate people to just kill in the name of you making them fat and happy and rich. So, you pull out the hocus pocus card, and in America, the Christian fundamentalists pull out the Christian card and have people go and kill in, you know, God's name and life, liberty, and all that other
nurses,
right,
and doctors
over in Iraq. So the Christopher Columbuses with cowboy boots do it in the name of Christian capital expansion, U.S. style, you know, with a little McDonald's stamped on their head. In Israel, they do it with a, what is it, a yarmulke? The yeah. Christopher Columbuses with
Star
a yarmulke.
David, they
yeah,
call it.
Well, I call it Christopher Columbus with a yarmulke on. They slaughter up the Palestinians in the name of their religion. Well, that's how the rulers justify it. They're really just imperialist dogs. But they're able to help mold the people into an unclass outlook of the issue by throwing out the hocus pocus dust. In the Sudan and in other places, the Christopher Columbuses with turbans on throw out the Islamic mystic dust. And voila, same result. Genocide for the masses. Now, the article continues on saying, concerned that the White House might soften its policy towards Sudan on the Darfur issue to encourage intelligence assistance was raised in an October report by the nonpartisan Congressional Research Service. It said Ghosh and other Sudanese officials had played, quote, key roles in directing attacks against civilians, unquote, and noted that the administration was, quote, concerned that going after these individuals would disrupt cooperation on countering terrorism, unquote. So in other words, get this. Everyone knows that many of these officials, and it has been reported, like Major General Salah Abdullah Gash over in Sudan, has been helping direct the genocidal attacks on the population in the Sudan. But the administration is concerned that going after these types of individuals, as the article states, would, quote, could, quote, disrupt cooperation on counterterrorism. So since Gash and them are helping them in their counterintelligence operation, pointing out the fact that these guys are homicidal maniacs could mess up their flow. Now, that's not unlike any of these School of the America dictators who cooperate with, you know, these figures in the administration currently and historically. You know, so you can run down a whole list where they would not want the facts reported on their collaborators in places like Indonesia and so on and so forth, because these guys are cooperating with them in their overall efforts. Now, it goes on to state that, quote, a senior administration official called intelligence sharing one of the, quote unquote, building blocks of the U.S.-Sudanese relations, but said, quote, it wouldn't matter unless there was progress in other areas, including human rights. This is, what progress?
What the hell they care about some damn human rights?
Well, 10,000 people a month are dying in Darfur still today.
No, hey, I'll say it again. What the hell does Sam care about some human rights?
So this building blocks, this is just an Orwellian term similar to what Reagan used during the apartheid era when he said we need constructive engagement. This was all this rhetoric. Now,
No, I hear you. It's inconsistent with their words, but it's just, you know, the more you think about it, it reminds me of the whole trip with Chiang Kai-shek, you know? Chiang Kai-shek was the general that dominated China, the chief warlord in the 30s. And basically, after he massacred the Chinese workers in Shanghai during the general strike in 1927, he was pretty much supreme. Mao ran off and started talking about he gonna organize the countryside. Well, you know why the general ran into trouble? He wasn't paying his own soldiers. And the United States still would not denounce this man. But why? Because he was their chief ball walker against Mao. And the thing got me, this would blow me, even after he got in the ship with the money that he didn't pay all them soldiers and left and went to Taiwan, or what they call Formosa, the United States still didn't break with Chiang Kai-shek. He done stole all his money. He done lost China. They still ain't broke with him. And it's, I always thought that was kind of strange, but listening now to the specifics of this deal with these Sudanese intelligence, giving intelligence to the United States, at the same time the people collecting the intelligence murdering innocent people daily. What's it to you? Hey, that's what's sad. What am I getting out of this? That's all they care about. They don't give a damn about no democracy, human rights. You're a fool if you give one second to that thought. Look at it. Think about it. You couldn't have had Rwanda if they cared about it. Go see Hotel Rwanda. Get that video and look at the humanity of the Europeans and the United States when it really mattered.
And any of you out there who supported the Khartoum government, the NIF, National Islamic Front, in the name of whatever, hocus pocus or otherwise, you expose yourself as a beat-down, pathetic hypocrite and a conspirer with the imperial program. Now, continuing on in the article, it says that, quote, Major General Ifati Mohammed Ahmed Urwa. Now he's a Sudan's ambassador to the United Nations and formerly a senior Mubarak officer, said that Ghosh at the time held the rank of colonel in the spy service and was not a decision maker. He was charged with keeping an eye on those people. He was monitoring their contacts, not discussing politics with them or facilitating their activities, unquote. But by 1993, the Clinton administration had listed Sudan as a state sponsor of terrorism, citing the country, quote, disturbing relationship with a wide range of Islamic extremists, unquote. It said Sudan's support of terrorists, quote, included paramilitary training, indoctrination, money, travel, documentation, safe passage, and refuge, unquote. In late 1995, the U.S. shut down its CIA station in Khartoum, and in February 96 withdrew its ambassador. Now, watch, he's saying all of this type of stuff to semi-cover up and try to pretend there's an on-again, off-again relationship. But in the middle of this, he has to admit this, meaning Silverstein, the writer of this article.
Oh.
Sudanese officials said their government, alarmed by the frayed ties, tried repeatedly, without success, to regain favor by turning over bin Laden to either the Saudis or the U.S. So here, the Sudanese were trying to turn over bin Laden to the U.S., and the U.S. wouldn't take him. Because they needed Uncle Ben to be out there. Because Uncle Ben is on their side. This whole thing is manipulative. It's all a manipulation.
I don't know on their side, but useful. What he was going to do made a difference for them to be able to hoodwink the American people. It made it easier for them
his Al-Qaeda
to get their program.
His Al-Qaeda network helped in the invasion in Yugoslavia.
Absolutely.
So he was more than useful for it. His network.
Oh, I'm sorry. What year was that they planned to give him over? Excuse me. I'm just curious.
After 95. He was there in 96. So, and this is when they were, you know.
And that was right before he bombed those embassies in Africa, wasn't it?
Or accused of. Now, it then states, though, the Clinton administration accepted an invitation by Sudan to send a CIA FBI counterterrorism team to Khartoum in mid-2000. But otherwise, the Bashar regime overtures were rejected. Now, if they're sending a CIA FBI team over there in mid-2000, then it's obvious that they have some counterintelligence
relationship.
Yeah. So what they're telling the public and the image that they're giving the public, of course, is going to be shrouded in somewhat mystery, lies, deception, because that's what they're all about. Now, to reinforce this, Professor Horace Campbell outlines the Sudanese government and how geopolitics and policies are played out in the world today.
Since 1989, we've had a conservative Islamic fundamentalist government in the Sudan. An Islamic fundamentalist, as I've said on this program, is like Christian fundamentalists. They're against the rights of ordinary working people, especially women. And they've unleashed a movement to fight against the people in the South and in the West called the Janjaweed, which is called a Justice and Equality Movement. This Justice and Equality Movement was a government militia of nomadic people were deployed, and they have created 2 million refugees by their rampage. And what the African Union has been calling for is support from the United Nations to intervene in Darfur to stop this genocide. Now, I want to say that the African Union is a new body, and it is moving very fast to intervene against military governments in Africa. One of the limitations of the African Union is its lack of military capacity to intervene. Therefore, it depends on institutions such as the Security Council of the United Nations. What do we have? The United States used Darfur as political football, because whereas the Security Council wants to bring those who are carrying out crimes against humanity in Darfur before the International Criminal Court, the United States was opposing this in the Security Council because the United States is more concerned about its charges brought against the U.S. in the International Criminal Court than against the crimes in Darfur. So last week, the United States was about to use its veto in the Security Council over the question of the crimes in Darfur. There were 57 war criminals indicted, and the names were handed in. Now, they had to be behind-the-scenes negotiations where France and Britain promised the United States of America that their citizens would not face any trials before the International Criminal Court if they were involved in anything Darfur. So that last week, we had the United Nations handing down judgment and say that the International Criminal Court will intervene. The point I'm making is that to stop the genocide in Darfur, we need more education on this.
We do need more education on this, and to collaboratively work together and not rely on the United Nations or any of these other particular forces that are obviously compromised and so on and so forth. But let me move on in this article right quick and go on where it says that how in late September, well, first, the newly installed Bush administration, the article says, took steps early in 2001 to improve relations with Khartoum, Sudanese and American officials said. The meetings explored possible cooperation on terrorism issues, but there was little progress, quote-unquote, until September 11th attacks that year on the United States, which Sudan condemned. Days later, the Bush administration abstained on a vote at the United Nations, with the result that Sudan was freed from international sanctions imposed for its alleged role in its efforts to assassinate Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak in 1995. At roughly the same time, the Sudanese turned over to the U.S. a stack of intelligence files several inches thick. They contained the cream of the information collected on members of Al-Qaeda and other extremist groups during their years in Khartoum and thereafter. By November 2001, the CIA had an active station in Khartoum, according to multiple sources. Among other programs, the agency was running surveillance on suspected foreign extremists with the knowledge and assistance of the Mubarak. Moving on in the article, it says that a U.S. source familiar with Sudan's cooperation said, quote, "They not only told us who the bad guys were, they've gone out and gotten them for us. Hell, we can't get the French to do that," unquote. So once again, these are various imperial regimes looking out for their overall interests. They're helping to make sure that none of these movements get too out of hand and too disruptive, and that can be used as pawns on a chessboard for their own purposes. In the same way that they'll allow these little drug gangs to roam freely throughout the communities, but at the same time, they'll keep intelligence tabs on them, and any kind of social political movement or consciousness that people try to insert within the gangs, they'll move in to try to stomp out, because they don't want the gangs to become more politicized. In the same way, in the prison systems, they don't want and have done a good job in depoliticizing prison activity and prison development amongst the prisoners.
That's exactly, by the way, I just had to say this. This is precisely what happened after the Rodney King explosion. L.A. went up, and youthful minds were looking around for solutions, including the Crips and the Bloods. There were actual meetings between the leaderships of these gangs at which socialists were present, along with people from the Pan-African, what was it called, that PAPO, the People's the New African Organization. You know, Ahmed Nene was there, and people from the CLP was there, and these young people I was talking to, they were, you know, people were listening. Their mind was open. There was a moment then when something really interesting could have happened. And Sam went to work. They would come through and disrupt some of the meetings and talk about it'll never work. The police were saying this to the gang members as they broke up the picnics. It'll never work. As it wasn't meant to be the way we had hoped. But it did put a cap on it for a period. There was a small window of opportunity that yet again we missed that opportunity to bring our community together and to rise above all that madness. But it was very clear for one moment that people did want better.
Now moving on in the article, it states that Sudanese and American sources confirm that the Bashir government has turned over terrorist suspects to other Arab security services, including agencies in Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and Libya, another country long at odds with the U.S. that has been cooperating on counterterrorism. Sudan has also initiated an internal crackdown on suspected extremists and is closely monitoring foreigners moving through the country. Quote, if they detect someone coming in that we might be concerned about, they let us know. Unquote, the senior State Department official.
Your terrorist said, enemy, huh? Well, ain't this something, man? Tracy, you're going to have to give up the article, baby. I got to read this again.
So, once again, this helps expose the role of those who operate within the neo-imperial capital sphere. They may fight each other on a grander scale, but they all agree in crushing any possibility of disruption or social movements anywhere around the world that are not a part of the imperial structure. In the same way that the U.S. Empire and its corporations collaborated with Hitler and those industrialists to crush the working class in Germany to make sure that an indigenous autonomous working class movement did not develop. They were willing to fight each other on a grand scale, but it was all within the sphere and spectrum of imperialists. It was one imperialist group fighting another with the machinery of imperialism. So no matter who won, which side won, imperialism was going to win.
Right.
The capitalists were going to win. That's what they agree upon. And they're willing to cooperate in crushing and undermining the social political movements and development of the masses anywhere throughout the world to achieve and maintain their particular interests. Hold on a sec. All right, as we wrap this up, I'm going to go into a few notes from A Draptomania. This deals with what recently happened the other night with Philadelphia basketball star Allen Iverson. It goes into how a Detroit Piston fan was charged Wednesday with throwing an object onto the court and hitting Allen Iverson during a playoff game. Iverson was hit Tuesday during the Pistons' 99-84 victory while he sat on the 76ers bench with about 2 minutes left to go in the game. Dennis Pauley was charged with throwing an object onto the plane surface and for occupying a seat without a proper ticket. His friend was also charged with a ticket offense. They could be sentenced 90 days in jail and fined $500. They basically arrested him, let him go. It's not clear they're going to charge him. It doesn't look like they are as time has gone on. He came out with a little statement saying, "I want to apologize to the public for what I've done," unquote. Now, the reason why I mention this is if you go back onto the Slave Revolt blog and check out the basketball segment that we did, you'll see how when Ron Artest was hit with a cup of beer, went up into the stands, got into the brawl with a number of other fighters who went up into the stands, the crowd and the population, American population, went wild. They talked about the violence that was displayed and how these players were out of control and on and on, and we dealt with all of that type of stuff. Now, here this punk, Pauley, throws an object which could have put out Allen Iverson or another player's eye. That's the end of their career. But it was an act of violence. You don't see any outcry by the public at large. Now, Allen didn't go up into the stands, but there still should have been an outcry because there was still violence committed. So what becomes clear is that this is not really, and what you saw a witness earlier in the year when Artest got hit and acted out in response to being hit, was the population really does not have a problem with violence. Its problem is when black people respond in retaliatory
and beat down white folks in the process. I'm sorry.
Self-defense and violence. That's what the problem is. Because violence was still committed, but you didn't hear no outcry.
Not a peep.
You didn't hear that little punk Stern, the head plantation manager, overseer in charge, you know, the commissioner of the NBA. You didn't see him come out and say, look, there needs to be more fierce penalty. Now, I'm not calling for any more fierce penalty or anything else by the state or anything like that. What I'm saying is when you observe this objectively, precisely, you can see that none of the wheels of condemnation that was put out by the corporate media, that was put out by the sports shows, that was done by Commissioner Stern, who basically suspended Ron Artest for the whole year.
Changed the whole season.
Right. For the Indiana Pacers.
For the whole league.
Right. None of this type of fierce reaction, condemnation, and draconian response comes down by any of these elements when it's violence by forces that are not black perpetrating it on forces that are black.
That's exactly right. That's the ugly truth. I have to say this, Tracy. They did mention it on the air that this person had thrown a coin. I think it was a penny.
A quarter.
A quarter. Okay. and that it struck Allen Iverson, and that that person had been removed from the game and arrested. But that's
Oh, yeah. They did mention that.
That's all they said.
Right, right. When the Artest thing happened, you remember, like, I played the little thing from the little liberal talk show who was screaming his head off and talking about how these players make too much money. They should throw the whole book at these players, so on and so forth. They make a lot of money, and this is the product that we come out and see. This is what we get. They went into the whole role model skit and so on and so forth. Here's this savage fan, reckless disregard to people's health and life, throwing something out there. There's no condemnation, is what I'm saying. No right. Fierce condemnation right. By elements within this society, by Stern, the commissioners, the NBA office overall.
Yap shows, nothing.
None of that type of stuff. And there's no connecting it to how they did with the Artest thing about hip hop, the generational type thing, how these guys are intolerant towards the law and have no form of restraint or anything like that. So this helps expose now the true nature of people within this society and how race does play a factor in these elements, even if it's not overtly talked about. Now, what did Stern have to say at all about this subject matter, or the subject matter of the NBA? The NBA and its players union are discussing expanded testing for performance-enhancing drugs. And Commissioner David Stern said Wednesday he is optimistic it will be part of the new labor agreement. Quote, no. I think it's incumbent upon every sport to just have rules that demonstrate to the fans that if you're in the NBA, you submit to a certain amount of testing. It's really a... Oh, man.
This is sickening. Don't do it, fellas. Don't get caught up in that game. And don't accept no ban on marijuana inside the NBA, neither.
So, basically, what do they shapeshift to? It becomes all about this drug testing thing. No comment by this lowlife Stern about the violence.
The assault on Allen Iverson.
Yeah.
You know something? I got to say this here before we cut, man. You know what? People tired of hearing about that steroid shit. They done played it out. And when you got the United States Congress in the middle of the so-called war on terrorism talking about steroids, that just shows you that's a diversion, brothers and sisters. Well, it's garbage.
The whole thing is a hoax because you have a number of cops who've turned out to be on steroids. And also, when a number of high school students out in these little suburbs and stuff, even girls, have been found to use steroids, and they're often not even athletes. You know, we have a society where people are obsessed with their physical appearance. So often many teenage males who are using steroids in high school aren't athletes themselves. They just want to look good. It's the whole Arnold Schwarzenegger type syndrome. So they're out in the
except one thing,
gym.
young ladies. Let me just warn you about something. Shit make hair come all out on your face. So just know there may be some unexpected benefits you get from steroids. But I tell you what, I don't want to talk about it. There's more important things on this earth. You understand? Than tripping and getting dragged around by your nose on some steroid testing. You know how bad it is now, Tracy? They're going to now test us, electricians, before every job. Any employer that wants you to be tested can ask for a drug test.
My whole point is that this steroid thing is not something that is just being thing that is being buttressed out because of professional athletes in baseball or football. This is a cultural, societal thing where people are over-infatuated with their physical appearance and image and et cetera, et cetera. So The same way that you see all of these silly TV shows, like, what is it, The Dove or something like that, where they're carved, you know, women are carving their face up to, you know, look like whoever and become, you know, all this plastic surgery and liposuction. Well, younger people are getting the clues from this type of conduct, and they're using pharmaceutical type stuff to enhance their physical appearance. So instead,
so they think.
So no, they are. So instead, what's enhancing their physical appearance by the fact that you have weightlifters like Arnold Schwarzenegger, who's long been a proponent of weightlifting and of that type of stuff. Now, and at this. Wait. What if you juice up on steroids? I'm going to do a commentary on this, the politics of steroids. There's hundreds of websites. They have it down to a science, literally a science, on different types of steroids you can use. They have types of steroids that you use, like if you have bronchitis. There's spray inside you and stuff. It's not just the old needle. There's creams, there's this and that, and they enhance and attack certain particular muscles and certain types of muscles that you want, etc., etc. Now, the fact that this has been going on for years, I seen on a website where cops from different cop agencies were talking about the type of steroids that they use, how long, what type of cycles, what they could lift before, what they lift now, how much they weigh, etc., etc., etc. So these fools are doing it because, I mean, it's not like they're not doing it for no reason and stuff. They're getting certain results. What I'm saying is that the results and the whole concept of using these artificial stimulants, artificial from the concept of over injecting these types of natural stimulants into your body, is from a warped perception of the world. You know, if you have 14-year-old girls using steroids to build themselves up, you know, they're working out and so on and so forth to make themselves more lean and strong and so on and so forth, instead of just working out naturally and becoming healthy naturally, it's because in part we have a quick fix society, and we have a society. No, it's not exactly what you were saying.
What I was saying, Trace, is that I don't believe that that shit really makes people look better. That's what I'm saying.
Look better according to you, right?
Right.
Well, I mean, like, if someone, like, is into weightlifting, per se, and they're into that Arnold Schwarzenegger. Now, I don't think that stuff looks good, but there's millions of people who do. And that's why they do it, obviously. Because they're in that field of competition. So what I or you personally think, I mean, that's kind of irrelevant to what the overall thing that is going on. But what is going on is a distortion from reality. Hold on a sec. But that's just going to about wrap it up for Slave tonight. It is clear that Satan is acting a fool on this plantation. And when we finally put a bullet in his head, and someone asked me, Tracy, why did you do it? I'll just have to say, hey, the devil made me do it. Until the next time, Slave Revolt. Out.
This is a warning, another cut to move on. Another beat that's so strong, hold on and I get wicked and then some. Stir up shit as the wit gets wisdom. P-Dawg coming up, I'm straight low. Pro black and it ain't no joke. Coming straight from the mob that broke shit last time. Now I'm back with a brand new sick rhyme. So blackjack time and tempo. Revolution ain't never been simple. Following the path of my unknown. Just build your brain and we'll soon make progress. Paid your dues, don't snooze or lose. They came with the master plan and got you. So know who's opposed to the dominant dark skin. Food for thought is a law for the brother man. P-Dawg with a gift from heaven. Tempo 116.7 keeps you locked in time with the program. When I get wild, I'll pile on dope jams. Then spit on your flag and government. Cause help the black was a concept never meant. Nigga, please, food stamps and free cheese can't be the cure for a sick disease. Just the way the devil had planned it. Raped and pillaged everyone on the planet. And give them fake gods at odds with all law. Love thy enemy and all that hoopla. Hear close the words I wrote. Crack cocaine is genocide of black folk. Who in their right mind ever could have missed this? Damn right when you think seditious. And I move swiftly. You can't get with me. The 666 move quick but miss me. When I came off involved in conscious. So don't ask why next time I start this. Allow me to freestyle and build and fill your mind up with know-how. A common sense, a defense. The next time a pig try to step to this, listen, never let someone whoop on you. They don't belong to the set you from you. Can't be intrigued by the leads of pig lead unless you don't give a fuck to be free. Keep stomping on them, keep stomping. Attitude, but I ain't from Compton. I can't be fucked around, I'm muffed around. I can't be held down, check the sound. And keep in tune on point on target. The revolution won't be thwarted. A setback cause my man is plain to see. Must in a white supremacy, so let the rhythm roll on when I kick this. Brother's gonna work it out with a quickness. And now you know just why our panther went crazy. The devil made me.